The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I'm your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bayman.
What's up, everybody?
Today we have Eugene Wang and Austin Bach here back from the Pro Tour, which was yesterday. How's everything, guys?
Pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, well, we didn't play yesterday, so that was not so good, but it's sure, not like sure. We expected to.
Yeah, just the Pro Tour just wrapped last night. What, you just got back in today, Eugene?
Yeah, that's right.
And Austin, you flew back late last night.
And I gotta say, it's very nice to be able to wear shorts outside again.
Yeah, pretty cold, right?
We are spoiled on the West Coast in our beautiful, sunny Southern California, where they're just 90 degrees in January.
I'll take sunshine over a Pro Tour appearance any day of the week. What? No, man. So you guys, this was the first Pro Tour for both of you, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty exciting first experience. Like, what was just your general, you walked in the door, what was it like?
It was definitely unlike any tournament I've been to. Just like, you get this vibe that you're part of something bigger that you've been part of before. You see all these players that you recognize from on stream.
Yeah, it felt more like a private party, whereas a GP would be like, you know, this huge public gathering.
Sure.
Just the entire community.
I would imagine so, because, I mean, a lot of Grand Prix nowadays are like 15, 16, 1800 people, and the Pro Tour is what, 400 people?
Yeah, there were, I think, 407 people or something.
So you've got 20% or less of the size, but every single face in Magic that you've come to know and recognize, they're all there.
A lot of them.
What was that like, just sort of walking around and every other person you see, oh, that guy. I know that guy. Because I'm sure you've seen these guys at Grand Prix before.
Right. Well, I mean, that part was not unlike a Grand Prix day two where, you know, you just see a bunch of good people playing at your tables. But it was different in that I didn't see that many people that I didn't recognize. If I did, then they were, you know, obviously foreign, so I'd have less knowledge about them. But, like, the American players, I recognize almost all of them.
Really, what are foreigners doing in Washington, D.C. anyways?
So, like, how do you guys feel about the intimidation factor versus, say, day two of a Grand Prix? Like, obviously, you've seen a lot of these guys before. Was it a little different just sitting down? Like, who were some of the guys in your draft pods?
Well, my pod was pretty stacked. I got there, and I was seated between Paulo Vitor Dama de Rosa and John Finkel.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty stacked pod. That's ridiculous.
I also had John Stern somewhere else in my pod, and like I recognized a couple of the other guys from like GP Top 8 coverage. So you definitely get the sense that like you're not going to get any freebies in your early rounds like you might at a GP.
Sure, sure. That's pretty crazy. What about you?
Yeah. I had Jamie Park in my first pod, and I think that was like the only really well-known pro.
Sure.
But then in my second pod, I went in X and 3, so there were, well, I mean, at that point, it's like pretty much everyone good has managed to make day two unless they got unlucky. So in my second pod, I had Nathan Holliday, Martin Yuza, and I'm trying to remember the last person, Matt Sperling, I played Nathan and Matt.
Yeah, and Andrew's played Sperling in the finals at that Grand Prix, what, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
We all know Sperling, he's local. Local cat. So this is really exciting to have two, because we've mentioned a few times, the Heidi Ho crew is kind of blowing up, and there's a lot of you guys have been day twoing, and now obviously going to the Pro Tour, we have a couple more guys going to the next one. It's very exciting to have two of you here at a Modern Pro Tour. I mean, that's, obviously we love Modern on this podcast, that's what we're covering, so let's start off, what decks did you guys play? Start with you, Austin.
Well, I played Storm, because they
were... Of course you played Storm.
I always try to find the most degenerate deck in the format. And they wouldn't let me play Birthing Pod, so I went back to my old standby, which is 20-minute turns.
How many of your decks have been banned out from under you in Modern now?
Oh, man. Well, Storm was the first deck I played when I picked up the format. Then Seething Song got banned. I moved on to Eggs. Second Sunrise got banned, and I moved on to Pod, which had Deathrite and Pod banned. So now I'm full circle back to Storm.
Well, how do you like this version of Storm versus the old Seething Song version?
It's definitely less explosive, but it's still as powerful, I think, as it was back then. Like, Goblin Electromancer adds a lot to the deck. People don't realize just how good that card is, I think.
I like that card a lot.
Well, I'm pretty sure if it comes into play, you win if it survives to your next turn. Basically. 80% of the time, right? Yeah.
Yeah, card's awesome. What about you, Eugene?
So, I had a similar story to Austin in that they banned my favorite deck, but I had never played anything in Modern extensively other than Birthing Pod. I played most of the Birthing Pod variants, and I played a lot of Birthing Pod when it was legal and standard, so I am pretty much like pod.
Weren't you messing around with Ascendancy for a minute?
Yes, I did play Ascendancy in Grand Prix Omaha because I was positive that Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time would be banned, so I felt like it was my only chance to play those cards in a big tournament, so sure. I might as well take it. I did not really think that Pod was going to get banned, but it did, and so now I just had to inflict my pain and sorrow onto the rest of the world, so I decided to play Burn.
After we got out of the fetal position, after the
ban list. So Burn, taking Burn to a Pro Tour, and incidentally, two copies of the Burn deck showed up in the top eight.
Yeah, definitely think it was one of the right choices, because just people were next leveling themselves and not thinking that that was what people are going to actually bring to a Pro Tour.
Well, Eidolon is so good, and it's, I mean, and like, I guess it just seems like that card kind of pushes it over the top for Modern, right?
It does. It's also a very tricky card to play. It's probably the card with the most play in the deck, in that if you're not careful, you can get trapped under it, and that is what happened to me in two of my matches.
Because you... let's clarify what card we're talking about. It's Eidolon of the Great Revels, right?
Yeah, so you can get into a situation where you can't cast any more spells.
Yeah, so it's a red enchantment creature. It's a 2/2 that whenever you cast a spell under three converted mana costs... three or less, you take 2 damage. So
whenever any player.
Any player.
But then, when you're at 2 life, you can't play spells ever again, because there's not another spell in the deck over 3 mana, right?
So the reason it's so difficult is because most of the spells that do damage in the burn deck are 3 damage burn spells. So if you take 2 every time you play 3, you're trading it for 1 damage. But if you play it at the wrong point in the game, or they can respond and get you at a lower life total, you will, in fact, just die, and you can't kill them, even though your spells are more advantageous for you, correct?
Right, you'll be essentially checkmated.
Yeah, it's an interesting card. It actually, I think it's a cool card to have exist in the burn deck, because it makes it a little bit less of just, like, bang my head against the wall and hope to break through kind of a deck. But, yeah, I mean, what was your experience like playing Burn?
I did not really have a great time playing it. As you can imagine, it's not all that fun of a deck. But also, a lot of games come down to, with Burn, they come down to maneuvering the game state into a position where if you top deck a Burn spell, you'll win. And you have n number of turns to do so before they kill you. And, you know, I feel like I got a little bit unlucky on my hits. Like, there were several matches that I would have won if 1 of 2 or 1 of 3 of the cards on top of my deck did damage to my opponent. And over half the cards in the deck do that. And
what did you think was your best card in the deck all weekend?
I want to say Searing Blaze.
Oh really? Yeah.
I mean, the obvious best card in Lightning the deck
Bolt.
Is it, no, it's actually Goblin Guide.
Okay.
Goblin Guide has the best mana to damage rate.
You usually get about 6 damage out of it.
If you're on the play, you can get 6 damage. You usually get 4 damage.
Okay. What about you, Austin? What was your experience playing Storm?
I hated playing against Eidolon with the Great Revel. Let me tell you that. That card, I can't beat it. But
do you play 4 Lightning Bolt in the main?
No, those are in the sideboard.
So game 1, you can't get rid of it?
Well, there's Grape Shot, but it's very difficult.
You don't really want to spend Grape yeah. Shot on Eidolon.
It's very hard to win game 1. But yeah, in general, I thought the deck was not a very good choice for this Pro Tour, to be honest. Mostly just because of how popular Burn was. And in a field where the metagame is so unclear, people are going to try to play proactive, faster decks, which combo can sort of struggle with at times.
I mean, when John Finkel isn't playing Storm at a Pro Tour, you know it's maybe not the best choice.
As soon as I heard he audibled to Infect, I knew it was in some trouble.
Well, you know, the story behind that is Finkel got won over by his testing team when they told him that it had a faster clock than Storm.
Yeah, well, because it added the Delve spell, right? The +6/+6.
The Become Immense.
Yeah, which is just crazy. Like, it adds, like, so much power to that deck. I mean, it's just a fast deck anyway. It's one of those high variants. It's like, what am I trying to say here? It's one of those decks that's not intrinsically powerful, like, say, Abzan. It's just, if it's the right call, it's...
You're playing a bunch of bad cards that together kill someone real quick. Yeah, versus it can be very explosive. Like, every card you draw is decent.
Which is the most awesome part about Modern. The deck like that can be the deck of choice for John Finkel on any given weekend just because it just happens to be good enough.
I mean, if you look at the top two, really, both of them, one of them was, like, a pile of bad cards that make something crazy happen, and the other one's a pile of just good cards that also make something crazy happen.
So the 28% of the field was playing Abzan midrange, which is, like, basically the current iteration of the original strong deck, Jund.
What's interesting about that is also, that was day two. So day one had 25%, and it went up. Day one had 25%, and by day two, it was at 28%. So it went up in how much of the field was playing it.
And now there's a handful of different lists of this deck out there. There's obviously the one list that... what's his name? Who played it? The Whitleaf Liege version.
Yeah, well, Brian Kibler championed the deck, and then they were on the same team, and so okay. He was...
So yeah, it played Whitleaf Lieges and Loxodon Smiters, and it was sort of the anti-Liliana version of the deck.
I mean, the joke is it's Pod without Pod, even though, I mean, there is something different. It's kind of just what green-white Hate Bears used to be, kind of, where you're playing just, like, Whitleaf Liege and Loxodon Smiter and Voice Resurgence, but the added black for Rhino, and it just looks very, very similar to what Pod kind of was doing. If you got rid of all the one-ofs.
How many times did you guys play against Abzan midrange decks over the weekend?
I played against it twice with Storm, and I won both of them.
Okay.
And I thought it was interesting because Abzan was... Everyone knew going in it was going to be such a high percentage of the metagame, or of the field at that tournament, that everyone that was playing Abzan had to tune their deck to beat the other Abzan decks, which kind of left, like, some maneuvering if you're trying to beat that deck. So, like, usually it's a pretty poor matchup for Storm, but... When those decks are, like, shaving on their Thoughtseizes and Liliana's, it suddenly swings things back in your favor.
I was actually really surprised about how little of Thundermaw Hellkite I saw all weekend, because I knew Lingering Souls was everywhere, and I just didn't see it on, like, anyone's deck playing it, and I thought it was, like, weirdly well-positioned, because we mentioned before, the only removal spell that kills it in the format is Path, and then it's just this 5/5 haste, but it ended up, like, I don't think, like, any blue-white-red decks did very well after day one.
The other card I was, well, first, before I say...
So I want to say that I think I played against Thundermaw Hellkite, and I say I think because I assumed he was in his deck, but I'm not sure. So I played two black-green mid-range decks. One was the classic Abzan, and the other was actually a Jund deck piloted by Rookie of the Year Ray Perez Jr.
Okay.
And he was playing red cards. He was playing Lightning Bolt along with Tarmogoyf and Courser of Kruphix and Liliana of the Veil. And so I was thinking, you know, why would he play that? And the only reason I could really come up with was that Thundermaw Hellkite trumps Lingering Souls, and all the Abzan decks were moving towards three or four Lingering Souls.
Other than Lightning Bolt, does the Jund version, like, what's it play? Like, it plays Olivia now in the four-drop slot, right?
Is that Olivia and Chandra.
And Chandra, okay, but that's pretty much it.
Those are options. Huntmaster's also an option.
Sure, it's one of those four-drops that replace Blood Raid Elf.
Right, just all these four drops that get outclassed by Siege Rhino. But,
right.
I guess Olivia doesn't really, but the others do.
I saw one copy of Dismember in Ifro's deck. I was a little surprised to see less Dismembers. It seems like a kind of an obvious choice if you can support it without taking too much damage, if you can actually be, like, a little bit more committed to black, just because there's going to be so many Rhinos.
It's very bad against Burn.
Right, so, yeah. If you're taking two out of it, it's still...
Yeah. Yeah.
Ifro was also playing Noble Hierarchs, which helps you win the Rhino Mirror.
So right,
that might have been a consideration as well.
He also had the one copy of Batterskull in his main deck.
Right, yeah,
to hedge. All right, so let's move on now. So you guys showed up knowing that after the banned and restricted list, that obviously Abzan was going to be the main deck of choice, and it was for most people. What else did you notice while you were there as far as things that surprised you? Deck choices, just general trends, maybe like the dealer's tables, what was missing?
Go.
So getting into your actual experience showing up, obviously this was the first Pro Tour since the banned and restricted announcement. We lost Treasure Cruise, Dig Through Time, and Birthing Pod. Everybody knew the format was going to look a little different, and you showed up to see a lot of Abzan midrange, which is what we expected, sort of podless pod. What else did you notice while you were there? Other surprising decks, maybe cards that were missing from the dealer's tables?
Well, I didn't really pay attention to the dealer tables, but I was pretty surprised at the fact that so many people were playing Infect, and not just Channel Fireball Pantheon, but
it was like 15% of the field. I think it was like the third most represented deck in the Pro Tour.
Yeah, like I saw some Canadian amateurs were playing it, and Austin Bursevich, one of the two players that went 8-0 on day one, was playing it.
Did you guys test against Infect?
I actually didn't. I didn't take it seriously. I thought that Abzan would be too oppressive of a matchup, so I kind of just... I tried to optimize for time. You know, we didn't have that much time after the ban restricted list.
Sure.
It's like, I'm not going to waste my time on this deck. Abzan crushes it. Clearly, I was incorrect.
What is that matchup like? I mean, why do you think Infect was able to show up through... I mean, why do you think it was so much less oppressive than you were expecting? Why do you think those guys chose it?
Well, for creature decks, it has one of the best counterspells to Abrupt Decay, being things that give creatures hexproof or protection from colors. Like, you know, the problem twin decks generally have against Abzan is Abrupt Decay is just a golden trump against them, plus Thoughtseize. So, like, Infect can kind of get around that, and they can get creatures down, or their lands get around Thoughtseize.
Right.
So their biggest problem is Lingering Souls, which I think did give them a problem. I mean, they didn't make the top eight. They didn't do as well on day two as they did on day one. But I do think that those two factors definitely helped them.
But they were playing the double strike trample instant that we talked about in the set review, right? The ferocious
Teemer Battle Rage.
Yeah, right.
That was played, I think, in a deck, but it was not in any of the
Channel Fireball guys.
Yeah,
no. I thought I saw it in
the
list.
I mean, a lot of interviews post fact that they said like, Become Immense was one of the reasons they did it. They figured out that this was a powerful Delve card. Delve is a powerful mechanic. We can take advantage. This is one of the ones that is best to be taken advantage of in Modern. So let's test with it. And they found that just Infect can beat face really well.
Yeah, Infect also struggled historically with blue-white-red control. And that was a deck that didn't show up or didn't have a very good tournament because of its poor Abzan matchup, so it was a pretty good metagame choice in that respect.
There was, like, no Restoration Angels at this tournament.
Yeah, there was a joke someone made that Restoration Angel was banned before the Pro Tour.
It was weird. That card, like, I mean, Edgy, yeah, it just didn't show up.
It's also, I mean, the metagame will cycle and it might come back. It just...
Sure.
The thing that I noticed with just, like, the tables in general, a lot of interviews, is pros don't really know how to react to Modern as well as they know how to react to, like, Standard. There's not really a benefit for, like... They don't get as much use out of, like, 2 weeks of testing between ban list restriction announcements and the Pro Tour versus Standard. Because, like, even though the format is a little open, it's still pretty much the same thing. So you'll notice a lot of them all just pick the same deck. They just, that's why Jund was, like, perceived as such a huge part of the metagame forever. And then Pod eventually took that slot over. Was just most pros were like, well, I know this deck is good. It's always been good. It's not difficult to play. Most likely, I'm not going to waste my time trying to come up with some better idea when this is just probably going to be better than it. So do we have a question? So we talk a lot about testing and coming up with decks and figuring out what deck choices to make for specific tournaments. What process did you guys go through to kind of figure out what decks you were going to play with? What was your testing process like? Who did you test with?
So we tested locally with some of our friends, some of who were and some of who weren't qualified. Built a gauntlet, and we just threw the various gauntlet decks at Abzan to start with to see what would realistically survive under the expectation that Abzan would be the best and most commonly played deck.
What was your Abzan list? Did you just, what you just figured, pile the best cards or something off
Jumbo
the
Seed Rhino?
okay, yeah.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I looked at successful Abzan lists. I mean, that was still a deck, even while Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise were in the format. So I just started with those. I experimented with lists that had Dark Confidant and lists that didn't have Dark Confidant. And initially I thought that Dark Confidant would actually be played. I think like Tassigur kind of pushed that.
Was it clear to you guys from the get-go that Tassigur was going to show up in numbers? Everybody was sure of it?
I was reasonably certain of it. I mean, I didn't think that it was going to show up as much as it did, but I thought that it would be the most modern playable card in Fate Reforged.
It's a pretty awesome card.
I was wrong about that.
It's Kessler's, like, favorite card before.
Oh, yeah. Well,
nuts.
It does everything I like to do. It dirtles with the graveyard.
It's really, really good.
Draws you cards. He has bananas available to him anytime he needs them.
Did you guys test together?
A little bit, yeah.
So, and then the rest of the Heidi Ho sort of team, I know you guys are, you don't have like an official awesome team name yet, right? It's like Team Heidi Ho. I keep trying to champion you guys to come up with a ridiculous name. Every time we have somebody in here, I try to insist, but.
What was, no. Single Moms?
Was yeah, the it was last. Kind of, it was an in joke on the last podcast. Nobody's going to get that. I just wanted you guys to like something random and ridiculous, but anyway. No, there was no,
There's no team name. I mean, we're not actually a team, right? We're
just well, kinda.
Friends.
I mean, well, so that would bring me to my next question. You know, when we had Andrew Brown in here a few weeks ago, we sort of asked him the question of like, okay, it's been a few years since the Heidi Ho magic sort of explosion started, and there was maybe 7 or 8 guys that took it kind of seriously at the beginning. And now 4 or 5 of that 7 or 8 people have qualified for Pro Tours. I mean, it's been quite the few years for you guys, and it's been pretty gradual, and everybody's kind of been in touch and stayed on the train together. I know there's a real sense in any competitive field, whether it's trying to be a stand-up comic or a musician or a competitive card player, when you get to that higher level and the people you kind of came up with start to make it, this feeling of like we've arrived. So for you guys walking around at the Pro Tour, was there a little bit of a feeling of like it finally paid off, like we actually made it, or do you still just kind of feel like you're grinding and you're not there yet?
No, I still feel like I'm grinding. Like I did feel like a little bit of a visitor, you know,
okay,
in the sense that there's no, I mean, I have a route to requalify,
right?
But I haven't gotten there yet.
Sure.
Maybe if I return, then I'll feel less like an outsider. But I was, you know, just looking for the couple of friends that I had that had qualified,
right?
And, you know, talking to some acquaintances that I'd met through GPs along the way.
Yeah, well, for me personally, it was definitely a big motivating factor to see guys like Eugene and Andrew succeeding on the Grand Prix circuit, because like in the years, the last few years, like traveling to PTQs in the area, it definitely felt sort of like a pipe dream. Like,
right,
oh, like there's this Pro Tour that like none of us have ever made it to.
Right.
And then suddenly it became this achievable goal, and it's like, oh, I can actually do this. And then,
yeah.
And then like 4 of us all did it within like 3 months of themselves. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think that's entirely coincidence either.
Oh,
just because like I want to get on this Pro Tour because I have friends who are going, and like that was definitely a big thing for me when I won my PTQ.
So if you look back to how long have each of you guys been playing Magic for now?
Like the since the
beginning. Yeah, like when you actually started, you picked up your first island or whatever.
Revised.
Okay, so you've back to the same as me, like 95, right?
Yeah,
around 90.
Something like that.
What about you? I'm sort of a noob. I was new for Exia.
So. Okay. But so when you think you would call yourself the front end of your competitive, quotations, guys, because you can't see me, your competitive Magic career, what year do you think that was?
Well, I played my first PTQ, I believe, in Shards of Alara Limited, but I didn't really take it seriously.
So that's like, what, 08 maybe-ish, right there? 08, 09?
Yeah.
Somewhere right in there?
And
08.
I continued to just play limited PTQs. I didn't really have any aspirations of actually getting on the Pro Tour. I just played in them because they were fun tournaments, and I top 8ed a few, but that was like, I felt like that was the accomplishment in and of itself.
No, I remember when I met you, you were like very dismissive of Constructed Magic. You were just like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. It's a waste of my time. What about you, Austin? Would you think you started kind of competitive?
I'd say it was probably like 2 or 3 years ago when I first started going to Heidi Ho, and okay, I found a group of guys who wanted to get to the next level and go to all the local tournaments and like get better as a group.
So I know you guys have all like played, you know, drafted a lot together and done a lot of testing before obviously getting to DC. I would imagine for you, Eugene, that winning a Grand Prix was probably that first moment of like, holy God, I did this.
Yeah. I mean, I even when I went to, I think Orlando was my 19th Grand Prix.
Oh, wow.
And I was actually ready to stop traveling long distances to Grand Prix.
Yeah, you were pretty, I remember seeing you like 2 weeks before, I think, and you felt like, you seemed like you were kind of burnt out on it.
Yeah, I was burnt out, and I felt like, you know, it wasn't a good use of my time, and the closest I gotten to qualifying for the Pro Tour previously was making the top 8 of a small Grand Prix, where you had to end up in the top 4 to qualify, and since then I hadn't really gotten super close, so I was like, I don't think I'll ever make it, and this is a waste of time and money.
So, other than obviously winning a Grand Prix, can you pinpoint a memory in your mind that was like a huge step along the way that you really remember meaning a lot to you as a Magic player?
I mean, top eighting a Grand Prix, I suppose.
That was the first. What about you, Austin, other than winning a PTQ?
Yeah, a couple months before that PTQ that I won, I finished in the top 16 of GPLA. Okay. And there was one point where I was like 12-1, and I just had to like win one of my last two matches to make top eight and qualify for the Pro Tour and all that stuff that I wanted to achieve. And I fell just a little bit short, but that sort of like lit the fire for me to really push in the next couple months to earn that invite.
Oh, and that was a hard tournament. I mean, that was basically a mini Pro Tour because the Pro Tour was in Hawaii last time. It like all of the pros came to LA the next week, were there for the GP, and then went everywhere else. So it was kind of like you guys were talking about, like, oh, there's a person I know from streaming online. There's a pro player I know from there. Right. At the Pro Tour, it was basically that at the GP because just everyone was there.
I think I still remember having a similar experience at GP Portland a few years ago.
Where, yeah, it's a similar up there. Just everyone lives up there,
right?
Already,
all the Seattle guys, there, and,
right?
So now you guys have both made it to a Pro Tour. What's next? What's the next step for you?
Get back on.
How are you gonna do it? What's
the path?
Grind.
For me, the path is pretty simple. Go to a lot of Grand Prix. I have 15 pro points for this year, and we are approximately halfway through it. So all I need is either a Grand Prix top eight or 2 12-3 finishes, or 12-3 finishes, 2 11-4 finishes, and I will hit silver, which would qualify me for a Pro Tour this season and a Pro Tour next season.
And you have a handful more Grand Prix on the docket in your head?
Oh, I've gotten more than a handful.
What about you, Austin? What's next?
I'm back to the PTQ grind, but I guess now it's the pre-TQ grind.
So, how do you feel about that? What's
I don't know, because like it's interesting for me because I didn't really like the old system, but then I won a PTQ, so I was kind of high on them. But yeah, now it feels a little bit harder to get on. Like to get to regionals, and I mean, there hasn't been a regionals yet, so I don't know how difficult those are going to be, but it feels like it's going to be harder for people like me to get back on the tour.
That was my opinion when we discussed it.
Right. I played at the Hideo Pre-TQ this last Sunday, and it definitely feels easier than winning a PTQ, it feels like winning a GPT. Like, the same level of competition, like, I did relatively decently, which has its benefits and doubts, but like, the field wasn't that hard because it is limited in standard, but it felt more like game day or a GPT, just with like a little bit more people than anything close to what a PTQ was. And I imagine a regional feels a lot more like a Pro Tour / PTQ in the middle between the two, where it, like, these are all people that earned their invites, but it's also they still haven't reached that next level.
You get a Liliana promo, which is awesome.
Which has
that
to
card's
be like
so pricey, it's ridiculous.
It's like almost $200. I would be surprised if that promo isn't about $200.
Yeah.
I think the fact that the promo is out is the reason Liliana regular isn't currently reaching $200 a pop.
I mean, that's great, really, if you think about it, that like if they were like winning this GPT, you get a $200 card as that's your, because maybe you'll use these buys if you go, but you probably won't because there's no airfare. It seems like that's kind of a nice addition.
I believe you still do have to attend the regional to receive the card. So if
this is
the regional
true,
is not nearby, then...
Sure. So let's jump into the Pro Tour. Obviously, the most awesome deck, or not awesome in quotations here, but the most surprising deck was the Amulet Bloom deck, the Amulet of Vigor Summer Bloom I Kill You With Primetime on turn two deck.
It didn't win, but it lost against Twin. I think it was... It's been around for a while.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it like 2 years ago or a year and a half ago.
I mean, none of the cards are like new. It's not like a new card was printed that made the deck possible. All the cards have been there forever, or at least since Zendikar, which is, I think, when Amulet of Vigor was printed.
Worldwake, I think.
Sure. Zendikar block.
Okay. Whatever, Kessler. This is my podcast.
So, it's been around. It's just... probably, and I was saying this about Pod before, is the most difficult deck to play in the format. This has actually probably been the most difficult deck to play in the format, because literally every mistake will kill you.
Well, it's crazy, right? Because you're stacking triggers, and then as soon as you have two amulets on the table, there's like multiple triggers, and if you get flustered or your opponent gives you a hard time about taking too long on your turn, you can speed through it, and one mistake means you'll miss one trigger, or you'll forget the pact, or
just the fact that like tapping your mana correctly for the mana that you are imagining you're going to need 10 minutes from now while you're, like, summer blooming a bounce land six times or two different bounce lands. And you're like, did I spend the red? Do I have red now? And if I have red, do I need blue? Am I going to need green? Sounds where, like, a ton of mistakes are just going to, like, ruin your day.
Do you guys play against it at all this weekend?
I didn't play against it at the Pro Tour, but I did play against it twice at Grand Prix Omaha about a month ago.
And what was the experience playing against it for you like?
Okay, so in my first round after buys, I played against Steven Speck, who was the finalist of the event.
And you knew about the deck before you played it?
I mean, I knew of the deck. I had no idea, like, really how it functioned, other than that it played a Primeval Titan and some utility lands and somehow killed you with that.
Right.
I won the match, but the most memorable moment of the match was in game two. Speck is on the play, and I lost during my first upkeep.
You lost?
Right.
Really?
It has a turn zero kill.
Oh, it's the hive mind version.
Yes, He played an Amulet of Vigor off of a Simic Spirit Guide, and then he played a Simic Growth Chamber and untapped it, floated blue-green.
Summer Bloom.
And then used that to play Summer Bloom, played it three more times, and made three green and three blue, and then cast Hive Mind and Summoner's Pact, and then I died.
So it's actually legitimately has a turn one and a half kill.
Right, so there was actually a deck with, for his first name, but Cohen, who was the one that made the top eight,
Justin
and Sam Black, and they... We're talking about, like, why is there... Because they left one Simeon Spirit Guide, and they're like, it's probably not correct, but, like, most other lists play four, but we felt like that actually just makes your deck kind of worse because you can... Because the deck is already, like, if you do not draw the exact right cards, it has problems.
Right.
They cut it for, what's the green tutor... Or not tutor, but you look for the top five cards.
Stirrings.
Ancient Stirrings.
They played, you know... Four ancient Stirrings instead, but they basically kept the one Simeon Spirit Guide because they felt just like the ability to turn one upkeep kill people, having that ability in the deck somewhere was just important enough to keep it there, but it probably would be cut eventually.
And that's what I've been saying. We've talked about this a bunch, but I still think that there are enough decks that should be using Spirit Guide, and I think that's like way more powerful than it gets credit for. I mean, I don't know. Obviously, if it can kill you on turn one, it's pretty darn good, but... You know, you do have to draw the right, and it's just a 2-2 later in the game, so it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, he did use 6 of the 7 cards in his hand, so it's fairly unlikely.
Totally unlikely. Like, actually, statistically, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, I just want to say real quick, I played in a SCG Legacy Open, I played a Belcher deck with 4 Spirit Guides, and I won multiple games by just playing them, casting them for 3 mana, and attacking
I've heard that. Like, yeah, I mean, anyway.
2-2 in a control matchup, a 2-2 is just going to kind of get there. Because, like, I don't want to kill that. That's a gray ogre. Like,
I don't want to force a will that. I'm just going to die to it.
So the tournament was won by Splinter Twin.
Yes.
And now Splinter Twin won the first Modern Pro Tour ever.
And now the most recent one.
Yeah, and the version that he won with was, I would say, pretty close to like the standard version. It wasn't playing any like weird. It wasn't playing green. It played like a couple Vendilion clicks, I'm pretty sure. It didn't play Kiki Jiki, so it's back to kind of the standard version.
Right. I mean, what's interesting is during the coverage, there are, I think, a total of 8 different types of Splinter Twin decks the Pro Tour through like in the archetype.
One was playing Humble Defector, right?
Yeah, like there was like a Tassigur versions and Tarmo Twin, which has been around for a while, blue, white, red. And then It just kind of was the twin deck that's been around since the beginning, really since it was in standard.
So I watched quite a bit of coverage. I saw most of the top 8 matches, and I watched the finals. And the one thing I have to say that I noticed was, obviously when you watch a twin matchup, if you know how the deck works, you know how careful the other player has to be. And you watch as they process in their head, they're okay, can he kill me next turn? Is it going to be 2 turns? All that. But Cohen takes like 9 or 10 minutes, I think, on turn 2. And the commentators even say at one point, like, oh, this is very reminiscent of Stanislav Sivko playing Eggs, where he has to be so... And they're trying to make it seem like, you know, because he is. He's doing math in his head, and it's so deliberate. He has to be so perfect all weekend, and he gets to this game, but I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, like, this is so boring. He's just sitting there staring at his hand, and, like, you can see the look on
Antonio Del Morel León.
There you go. You can see the look on his face. It's the exact same look that was on... was it Shouta? No, it wasn't Shouta. It was, I'm mixing my players up. Who lost to Sivka at that Pro Tour?
Yuya?
Yeah, Yuya. It's the same look that was on his face. The sort of like rolling your eyes like, okay, like, if you let me play my turn, I'll probably win, but if you kill me first, I'll just sit here and roll my eyes, even though this is the biggest moment in Magic in my entire life, and well, maybe I'll never even have as big of a moment, but I'm just on camera looking super bored.
I think there was a point in the top eight where they told Justin Cohen that, like, the next warning for slow play he got would be a game loss.
Right. They're like, you have to advance the board state. So anyway, my opinion on this sort of thing is I'm glad that a deck like this exists, because really, honestly, Splinter Twin versus a deck like this is the epitome of Modern. That's like what Modern is. It's like some weird random combo deck that like nobody really believes is a thing, making the finals at a Pro Tour and then the most consistent combo deck playing against it.
I mean, in the defense of the format, almost every Pro Tour has a rogue deck no one thought was a thing or didn't believe in. Top 8ing.
Yeah.
I mean, Blood Moon last, or
Blue Moon
last year, Eggs the time before that.
Yeah.
And then before that, it was like combo heaven because it was.
Yeah.
Not Urzatron.
12 Post?
Yeah, 12 Post, followed by like Blazing Shoal, in fact. Like, that was the Wild West of Modern.
So it's cool. It's just, I think my opinion on it is I don't know how good it is to have that kind of Magic make it to the finals, because as a spectator, which is mostly in Modern where I am these days. I mean, we play a lot of Modern together, but obviously I'm not on the Pro Tour. So when I'm watching Magic at the highest level, it's a little annoying for my ADD to kick in and just be like, this is super boring. I'm getting tired of watching this.
I guess two things at that point. A, I think this is way better than what Eggs kind of did because of the ability to win out of nowhere.
Because there's Primeval Titan in the deck.
Well, yes, that. But I mean, like, A, that allows you to actually play real Magic because they're playing a creature and everyone has Path to Exile in their deck. But
right.
The other side of that is even when you're winning through the combo win, which with Hive Mind, that happens generally quicker than Primeval Titan. So at least if they're doing their game plan correctly, they can win quickly. It's not like Eggs, where if you're doing your game plan correctly, you're going to take a 20-minute turn.
Sure.
This one, you could take 20-minute turns, and that's normally your more difficult turns, but you completely have the option of just winning quickly.
Where are you guys on this deck? I mean, Austin, this feels to me like an Austin kind of deck. This.
Oh, yeah. Like, I love the decks that can just, like, explode out of nowhere in, like, a single turn.
Did you ever consider playing this deck?
It wasn't really on my radar. I didn't think the deck was really good. I actually...
It is now.
I didn't play it at the Pro Tour, but I did play it in GP Minneapolis about a year ago.
Oh, really?
And they, like, killed me on turn two, and I just thought it was a fluke. I'm like, this is dumb.
Oh, you played against it. You played against it.
They, like, I had the path for their Titan, and they, like, had the Pact of Negation. This is stupid.
Did you give your opponent the satisfaction, which is, like, any player who plays this deck, where you, like, reach across the table, and you're like, what does this card do? What does this card do? That's, like, anybody who picks a deck, like, that's, like, all they want you to do is be like, oh, you're so clever for beating me with this deck.
I mean, anybody that plays an unexpected card just wants their opponent to pick it up and read it, right?
I'm like, this is called Grand Architect. No, this is called Grand Architect, guys.
That is what Ben lives for.
Hunted Horror, this is called Hunted Horror. It's from Ravnica Block. It's a 7/7. It's bigger than your Wurmcoil engine. What about you, Eugene? Did you never, or how do you feel about the deck, is what I mean to say.
I mean, I'm fairly indifferent to its existence. I think that it's fine to have it in the format, although it may violate the turn four philosophy that
sure.
Wizards has, but I don't think it is going to have an oppressive impact on the format or anything.
Do you guys wish there was a little bit more Modern year round to play, or what's your feeling on it?
I did back when Birthing Pod was legal.
Well, actually, this is something I want to say. I mean, after this Pro Tour, the GP before this Pro Tour had 8 different decks in its top 8.
Right.
This had 5.
Sure.
So I don't know how much diversity, and this is partly because I think Pro Tours are leaned, and I mentioned this earlier, that pros kind of like only like taking safe choices when it comes to
sure.
Modern Pro Tours, but, you know, how much did Treasure Cruise and Dig Through Time and Birthing Pod really help to diversify the format? What it ended up doing is just made it Lingering Souls as the most played card on day 2, and then from that point on, it's just Splinter Twin and Jund decks.
Well, but we've always said this, though. I mean, a pro sits there and they look at the field, one of these guys that's on a team that's all they do is play Magic, and they say, I trust in my ability as a player to win if I take a 50% deck. So if they take Abzan, they're just going to be like, I will be able to win more of the time because this is a pile of good cards, as opposed to I have to outsmart the format if it's, you know what I mean?
Right. And well, and because the format is a little bit more solved already, a lot of the time, and it's I think teams have something to do with this. When, you know, you have 15 of the best pros all deciding together, oh, Infect's the best deck, we're all going to play it.
Right.
Then that warps the format. Like, then, like, that makes it so it goes from, like, what would have normally been a 3% of the format deck to, like, 15%, like, overnight, making it just, like, and then those pros are going to do well because they're the best players in the world and they're all friends with each other, so they are all playing the same deck, so in the end it'll lead with them
Sure.
You know, getting to the top tables, which is kind of maybe why that happens with Pro Tours versus right. GPs. I'm very interested to see what the next modern GP looks like.
So that's Vancouver. That's 2 weeks. Are either of you guys going to that?
I will be going to that.
If you don't mind us asking, do you have any idea what deck you're going to be playing?
Not Burnt.
Not Burnt, okay.
Amulet Bloom. Hunted Handsome.
Hunted Handsome. We have a list. It was on a couple of podcasts ago. You can find it online, rocketjump.com.
How much will you give me to play on that?
I'll chip in.
I'll give you everything in my pocket. $7. I'll give you $7 to play it. I won't provide the cards. I burned them all.
Okay, so now that we kind of have talked about Amulet Bloom, we're going to talk about it more to death. We're going to actually do the deck tech today on the deck itself. Now, we kind of mentioned this. It has really three plans. Its first plan and kind of what it does to do the other one is ramp like crazy using the combination of bounce lands, Amulet of Vigor, and cards that allow you to get multiple land drops per turn. So
when he says bounce lands, he means the old Karus from Ravnica. So they are lands that enter the battlefield tapped. They have the ability to tap for one mana of two different colors. And when they enter the battlefield, a trigger goes on the stack that you have to return a land already in play to your hand.
So how it works is what Amulet of Vigor does is it's a one-drop artifact that whenever a permanent comes into play that would come into play tapped, it untaps it. So
it's a triggered effect.
Right, so you can actually respond to the bounce land's return effect by tapping it for mana, then bouncing it back to your hand. And if you play something like Summer's Bloom, which lets you get three more extra land drops, you can generate six mana just by playing it again and again and again, which lets you get the six mana, very conveniently lets you play a Primeval Titan, which then brings in two more lands that also untap when they come to play.
I think this is a classic example. We always talk about how in development, they don't test for Modern Legacy. And I'm sure when they were designing all of these different cards, they didn't really think that somebody was going to combine a bounce land with Amulet of Vigor, with Summer Bloom. I mean, Summer Bloom was reprinted in 8th edition. It's one of those weird, like, I think it's a Visions card originally.
I mean, two things. One, anything that's in 8th edition is just, like, weirdly out of place in general if it sees play in Modern. Like, none of them fit with what the rest of the format's trying to do. The other side of it is none of the cards in this deck were printed when Modern existed as a format. Not one.
Even Amulet.
Yeah. Amulet of Vigor was Prime World Time. Wake. Not Modern didn't exist. Prime Time was before Modern existed.
Guess they're all pretty close to... Yeah, you're right.
So, like, that wasn't even in consideration. I don't... Gavin Verhees didn't even create, like, whatever Super Extended or... Overextended was but when these cards were printed. So, nothing in this deck was like, oh, this is going to be a combination in a future format that doesn't exist that we're not thinking about.
It's true, yeah.
Especially since the cutoff is, like, 8th edition, where on top of that, that set just wasn't thinking about what it was doing. If you go through it, half the format's like... just protection from different colors.
Yeah, we did a set review on that on 8th, I think 8th and 9th.
Yeah.
And it's the most ridiculous wasteland of just, like, nonsense cards that aren't good, have no place being in, like, being reprinted into core set. Things that are, like...
Oh, the Circle of... All the Circle of Protections are in the format. Plus stuff like...
Shifting Sky and, like, just weird cards that are terrible.
But you also get these super, super hateful cards that exist in Modern.
Like Blood Moon.
Yeah, like Blood Moon and, like, Boil and Choke.
Choke, yeah.
Ensnaring Bridge. Just incredibly unfun hate cards.
All these super griefer cards. They're just like, that's in this, what?
So we talked to death about, and then we will get back to the deck tech, but we've talked to death about Blood Moon. You guys knew me at the time when I was PTQing with you, where I would just be cursing Blood Moon like the whole way home. I was so angry. I would hate it so much. And then I finally took it to a tournament once and I like did well with it. I was like, this card's amazing. I was like, this is so good. This is so good. So I vacillate back and forth on Blood Moon. It definitely, in game two of the finals, he just plays Blood Moon and wins.
I think you can argue that Blood Moon won the Pro Tour.
Yeah, well, that's always been my argument why I think that card's so stupid. You shouldn't be able to play a single card in Magic that's just like, if I play this, you have no way of getting around it, except maybe you can draw like two cards out of 60.
Generally, you have to draw a forest.
Yeah, and it's just so stupid. It's like, why does that card exist? I mean...
Well, it exists because 8th edition was weird.
I know, but they ban cards all the time. I'm not saying they should ban Blood Moon. It's just the sort of thing where, I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think about Blood Moon? It just...
Well, I had it in my sideboard in Storm, and it was like one of the ways that I could beat Abzan, so I'm a fan of the card.
I feel like everybody exists on the same. It's either you play with it, you win with it, or you lose to it, you hate it.
I strongly dislike the card.
Yeah.
I may usually play decks that are incredibly weak to it, that may have something to do with it. I just think that it promotes crappy gameplay.
Yeah, I totally agree with him. All right, so we've covered Amulet of Vigor, we've covered Bloom, the Bounce Lands.
So generally, it tries and casts two big spells. Right. And they actually synergistically, what they're trying to do, work together. So the main one is Primeval Titan. And what it does is, when it comes into play, it brings in more lands that then untap with Amulet of Vigor. When those come into play, generally it plays a land that either gives Primeval Titan haste or gives Primeval Titan double strike. And generally what it does by giving it haste, he then attacks, bringing in the double strike land, then giving him double strike and swinging for, I think it's a total of 16 damage when it swings.
This is like totally, yes. We talk about like the degenerate things that can be done in Modern, and also using a Primeval Titan in the process. If you watch this deck in action and you see it work when it doesn't take 22 minutes to win, it's pretty remarkable. It's
glorious is the
word I would use. It's every Magic player who's like, I want to do something off the wall. It's like everybody's dream. You get to play like 10, you get to play like 5 lands in a turn, get a 6/6 into play, have it attack, get 4 more lands, double strike it, or you can just hive mind and pact and have them lose the next upkeep. It's crazy.
Well, it also doesn't kind of get into like if you have 2 amulets in play, what ends up happening, because just, you get double triggers on tapping, so you literally just, it basically starts just vomiting everything in the deck into play all at once, because you can double pact for 2 Primeval Titans and put them in the play off of the mana that then gives them both haste and double strike. It's just
and if you have 2 amulets, you can one shot your opponent by just giving Primeval Titan +4/+0 instead of +2/+0 and then giving it double strike.
Right.
Why does this deck not play Wolf Run?
It doesn't need it. It's more mana intensive than double strike.
Prime Time already has trample.
Right.
So. Slayer Stronghold does what Wolf Run would do, but more efficiently, in that it pumps the power. Primeval Titan already has trample, so it doesn't need that.
Gotcha.
Right.
Also, Slayer Stronghold gives it haste, which is important.
Right, yes.
So it's though more important. It is playing Talaria West,
which is one of our favorites, just a standout. Alex Toolbox Kessler.
That's game plan A. Game plan B is Hive Mind. Now, what Hive Mind does is it's an enchantment. It's a blue enchantment, costs 6 mana, and any spell that any player casts is copied by both players. The way it wins is it uses the packs, which are the zero-cost spells that you can cast for free, but then you have to pay an upkeep cost on your next turn or you lose. But if you cast a pact that is not in the colors that your opponent has or more expensive than the amount of mana your opponent has, they just auto-lose on their upkeep.
Yep, it's pretty much totally unfair and awesome.
The cool interaction it has is, you know, the blue pact is also a counterspell and permission spell, which is really helpful because you're playing a combo deck and being able to stop them from stopping you can outright just win you the game. And the green one lets you find, if you don't have Hive Mind, you can use it to find your Primeval Titans, which will then ramp you so you can pay for the pact on your next turn. So it's weird how synergistic the whole, both different win conditions work together.
This is probably the most difficult deck I've ever seen. Like, I can't think of a deck that is more difficult as you, like, when you get into 2 amulets. This is the kind of deck that I would absolutely time out if I tried to play at a Grand Prix. Or if I was to build it and try to test with you, Kessler, you would just, like, fire me from the podcast. Or, like, kick me out of the building, probably, because I'd be so slow playing it.
No, I would leave and then come back. I'd F6 the game.
And I'd just be sitting there just tanking. In testing with proxied versions.
Just get some food.
All right, so that's kind of the way the deck works. Let's run the gauntlet a little bit, and I think we'll maybe defer to you guys on this, obviously, because you were at the Pro Tour, you kind of saw the way it worked, you've played against it. I haven't actually played against this deck personally. We'll start with Twin, which is...
Actually, let's do Twin last.
Because it was the finals.
Yeah.
So we will start with Burn. Eugene, you played Burn. How do you think you match up against this deck?
Wow, that's interesting, actually, because I didn't test against it, so I'm not entirely sure. They have a really fast combo kill that can potentially outrace the burn clock. Packs interact poorly with Eidolon of the Great Revel in that they cause you to take damage.
Right.
But I think that if they land the Primeval Titan and they get their Radiant Fountain, and then they end up being able to attack, then you're probably done because they'll be able to. So the deck runs some number of Radiant Fountain, Glimmer Void, and Vesuva, and between those, they would be able to gain enough life to put themselves out of reach. So I think that Amulet would be slightly favored.
Is there a reason they would run Radiant Fountain rather than Kabira Crossroads? Because they actually use white mana in the deck?
Radiant Fountain comes into play untapped.
does right. it?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was given to tap.
Well, and the one thing to remember with that trick is that the bounce lands that you get to recur it as much as you want.
Right.
Which would work with the fountain, but this one comes into play intact, which is
gotcha.
The play.
So
but more importantly is not only do you gain the small life buffer when you just get it into play with, you know, you can either get with Primeval Titan or Teleria West, you can then start recycling it with your bounce lands when you go off.
So also, this showed up in the top 8. Obviously, there was one of this deck and two burn, or there's two of each in the top 8?
Two burn, two twin, one amulet, yeah. and then three Abzan, yeah.
So obviously, the burn player hates to do this, but I saw in the burn matchup where they spent like a Flame Slash and a Lightning Bolt to kill a Primeval Titan at one point. That's like the only chance that you would really have as a burn player if they get their plan online, right?
Well, you would prefer to be killing them when they cast the Titan, and I think that if you can't, then you're gonna lose.
You're grasping for straws. So then, if the next matchup is Infect, similarly quick, probably faster clock than burn, right?
Infect does have a faster clock than burn, and the Amulet Bloom has very little interaction in it.
Right, your only bets really are killing them quicker, or maybe pacting them to then kill them quicker.
They play a single slaughter pact.
Yeah, one slaughter pact, but even then it's, you know, they have some interaction, but once again it's how much are you doing against their threats where they'll just untap and then put another threat in the play and keep coming at you.
I think because the Bloom deck is such a quick deck, it defies the turn 4. I mean, it obviously can take up to 4 turns sometimes or more, but because it can win on turn 2, this matchup feels to me very much like who goes first. Like if you're on the draw,
that matters a lot, yes.
Just in general in combo matchups, it's very draw dependent.
Yeah.
I mean, that was, you know, some of the original statements about what Modern was when it was created was it matters more in this format than any format before who goes first.
Right. Yeah, that would make sense. Okay, so Abzan midrange, the boogeyman of the format. How do you guys think that matchup, Austin? What do you think?
Well, I think that the Abzan decks that we saw in this particular event were kind of not prepared for combo because they were expecting combo to not show up in big numbers, which it didn't, which is why we saw a few combo decks rise to the top because the Abzan decks weren't really gunning for these, you know, powerful, consistent, but very linear strategies.
Right. And this deck itself, I feel like, is a little stronger versus Abzan's general plan against combo decks.
Sure.
Like Thoughtseize and Liliana aren't as strong against this deck as they say would be against something like Storm or Twin, because it's not as much of a deck that's, first off, most of the pieces are lands, which you can't get with Thoughtseize, and it goes quicker than Liliana comes in play. And something that's cute, and they talk about this, is you use Kalini Garden, which puts a 0/1 plant token.
Right.
It's in the deck. Purely to protect Titans from Liliana the Veil.
Yeah, definitely. This deck feels like Liliana's too slow to mess with you because you more than likely will just discard a land or won't have your creature in play yet. So
I would agree that Liliana's probably too slow, but Thoughtseize can still be good.
Is really, yeah. If they take your Summer Bloom or something like that.
If they're on the plane, they take your amulet, then your deck's bad.
Right.
There were a couple games on the coverage where the amulet deck just like didn't have much to do in the early turns, and it was just like land go, bounce land go, and then just like it looks pretty poor when it doesn't get its engine going.
Though the few games I did see on coverage that were these two matchups, what ended up happening is just Titan, like, Abzan didn't do enough. I mean, and I think the Abzan lists that were more similar to the pod list that we mentioned would probably be a worse matchup, but regular, just straight up Abzan doesn't put threats on the table enough, quick enough. Like, they can just get the 6 mana cleanly. Like, Abzan's not about killing you quickly. So, like, just casting a Titan or Hive Mind off of just getting the 6 mana naturally is something that they have to worry about. And even if they get rid of your amulet, Summer Bloom doesn't let you go off, but it does let you ramp still. You're still ramping mana when you play it. So you go, like, you can still, like, by turn 4 have a Titan in play, and there's, or even a Hive Mind, and there's not a lot Abzan can do against that.
It also plays Azusa, so Summer Bloom's not your only...
Yeah, you have six. The only card that you only have 4 of that's important is Amulet.
Yeah, the issue with Azusa is that because the bounce lands trigger when they come into play, you can maintain priority and play your first one after you play Azusa, but they can respond to the first trigger before you can play your second land. So you only will get one if they have a removal spell for Azusa, whereas with Summer Bloom, you can just dump your hand.
Yeah.
I think, what do we have? Oh, Blue-White-Red. Blue, white, red, and then twin. So blue, white, red, which didn't really show up this weekend a whole lot, feels pretty control-y. And obviously they can play around your mana leak because they just can play lots of lands.
I mean, the reason I included it in the gauntlet is I tried to kind of lean at all the different ways that decks attack you. Theoretically, in fact, Infinity would be another similar deck in my head.
Right.
Against control, you know, it becomes a counter matchup a little bit, and that's also kind of what happens with Twin with other combo decks, where, I mean, if I'm wrong, you guys can disagree, but, like, the fact that they have counter magic is something you have to be worried about where you normally don't in the format, because counter magic is generally not as good.
Well, I remember when we asked Andrew, who he really likes Blue, White, Red, when he looks at his opening hands, because I think it was Mulligans were the discussion, and he said it's really difficult if you don't have Path, Bolt, or Mana Leak in your opening hand. And obviously, Bolt is not the card you want against Bloom. But Mana Leak in the early game, to sit there and, like, establish that, like, you have... They can't just play some Bloom on turn two. They have to wait till they can play around it. And then, obviously, Path is very good against Primetime.
I don't think that Mana Leak is all that great against a competent Bloom player, because they're able to generate so much mana that they can just be patient. And Blue, White, Red definitely is not a deck that can be all that proactive with a clock.
Right.
So your remand is literally dead.
Right.
If they think that you have remand and they're on the Titan plan, they just get Cavern of Souls with Tellaria West, which both parts of that are uncounterable, and they can't counter your packs with remand, so...
Right, and the few counter spell wars I saw... The only one, it took three counter spells from the twin player in the finals to actually beat it. Because the pact, you can just cast it and then win that turn.
Right.
Because they have the ability to win that turn, the negative effect of a pact where you're time walking yourself on your next turn matters a lot more. And the fact that they ramp so hard means that even if they do time walk themselves, it's not as bad because they still have 9 mana. So they only lose out on the 5.
Well, path is good against you. And then also blue, white, red after board has counterflux, which is probably pretty darn good against you, I would imagine. Though maybe a little slow if they get a good start.
Even then, it's like worst case scenario, they counter one of your spells, but they're not doing anything.
Yeah, right.
Like, in reality, I think Geist blue, white, red decks are probably a little bit better because Snapcast, Snapcast or Bolt and Geist coming at you is something you have to be.
So you have to get that three turn win, otherwise you'll just lose.
Yeah, like what are you really countering with Counterflux? Are you countering a pact? Because then you're down on mana.
Well, they don't have to probably Hive Mind or Titan would be the cards you're countering.
And it's very difficult to counter a Titan because they can search for Cavern of Souls.
True. All right, the last deck, the finals deck, Twin, which super boring to watch the matchup. What do you guys think? I mean, it seemed like Blood Moon was the card as you said, won the Pro Tour.
Yeah, a big part of it, too, is Twin is very similar to Blue, White, Red in that it can play a very controlling game plan, like...
End of turn game.
The winner of the event, Antonio, whatever his last name is, he...
last name.
We have Eugene on hand for this one. You got it right last time?
Del Moral Leon.
There we go.
Very good.
He post-board, he had a lot of counter spells to bring in to mess with the Bloom player's proactive plan, but... Really what gave him the edge was the ability to play all these flash creatures and put pressure on his opponent's life total so that he couldn't just sit back with infinite time and set up, like, sculpt the perfect hand to fight through the counters and, like put the ball in his court, basically, which gives the twin player a big edge.
Do you think without Blood Moon he would have been anywhere near as confident in that matchup?
Yes. Nearly. Because Deceiver Exarch and Pestermite are so good against Primeval Titan.
Right. Shuts down the plan pretty well.
And tap lands.
Yeah.
To a certain extent.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely just... Because it's all about, like, an extra two turns on either side means so much, but because your plan as the twin player actually negates their plan by tapping down their threat, it shuts down half their deck because they have to try to beat you with Hive Mind, but then you can just counter
right.
that.
Right, and you're advancing your plan while shutting down their plan.
Yeah, so it seems like Twin's pretty well positioned against it.
Right, which is why it beat it in the thing. one thing I did want to point out, because this I just remembered this for the Abzan matchup, Liliana can be a problem if they stick it to a certain extent. Their game plan, actually, for sideboarding is they have 4 or 5 different giant just random dudes
right
that just cost a bunch of mana, so they have like I think 1 Hornet Queen, 2 Terastodon,
oh yeah I saw this yeah.
or not Terastodon
Thragtusk
And like their game plan is just like, I'm gonna top deck better than you. Like your cards are gonna be Tarmogoyf. I'm gonna play Thragtusk, and it's just going to be better than what you're doing.
Makes sense.
And they get the mana. Like they can, they have no problem getting the mana in play. It just needs to be something to kill them with that. Like his Thoughtseize resistant, and just having more giant threats that are impossible to deal with is their game plan.
Because they can just play a Hornet Queen super fast.
Right. If you right. if you get a Hornet Queen anytime before in turn five against Jund or Abzan, I don't know exactly how they beat that.
That actually also sounds like a hedge against cranial extraction effects.
So right. they don't
lose their Titan and their best plan.
Right. Well, that pretty much wraps us up for today.
Yep.
Covers the Pro Tour. Thank you guys for coming by. It's awesome to talk to somebody. I mean, one day after the Pro Tour, it's pretty exciting.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we'll hope to talk to your crew. We've talked about it before, but we would really want to get as many of the guys from the team all in here together for like a big group cast at some point to just sort of tell the story from beginning to end.
We'll get like double decker chairs.
Yeah, it's a small room. We'll do something. Well, I don't know. But yeah, we hope to do that in the future. Kessler, you want to give some shout-outs real quick before we...
All right, so as always, we've been doing these shout-outs where we shout on Twitter a question and we get some answers. This week, we asked what people's favorite new deck they saw at the Pro Tour. A lot of people said Abzan, Infect. I'm going to say it correct this time. It's V is for Vincent. I keep saying Viz for Vincent.
Yeah.
He tweets it every week. He said the Amulet Bloom deck, that the fact that two of them played into the finals, the second Amulet Bloom deck was his favorite. The other one is Ziggy Nix, which is Ziggy Mondias. I'm never going to say any of these things right. I'm like the worst person to be reading these.
We're sorry, Ziggy.
He loved the fact that there were like four different versions of Abzan that all kind of made it towards the top right. tables. Also, you know, as always, please shout out to us on Twitter. We are the MMCast on Twitter. I am at Kess Wiley.
I am at Ben Bateman Media.
And you guys both have Twitter. We haven't had someone with Twitter on for some reason, like the last four casts, but what are you guys' Twitter accounts?
You can find me, Eugene, at Dead Sea Shoals.
And I am Buckwiz18.
That's with the weird names, guys. Buckwiz Shoals. I was kidding.
And we'll be tweeting those. And if you go to rocketjump.com, you'll be able to click on the Twitter links there. As always, you guys should go check out our sister podcast, The Command Zone.
Which is, say it right.
Say it right. Oh, I get the Twitter right every time. It's The Command Cast. I just get their name wrong because I keep calling it The Command Cast.
Right. Okay, well, that was embarrassing. We got it right.
Yeah. I got it right this time. Back off.
So rate us on iTunes. Obviously, your feedback means a lot. We are now on YouTube as well. We are putting all the old episodes up and the new episodes up.
So we've been doing Throwback Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll post a video from like last September, which sometimes is really funny because they're super dated. I think this week we last just posted the Khanza Tarkir review, where we talk about how unplayable Dig Through Time and Jeskai Ascendancy are.
Pretty funny.
We were really good on that one. And then every Monday, Tuesday, generally, the video, the most recent podcast from the week before will be posted.
Also, we are trying to get Paul Reitzel in here. So tweet at him because we think he's awesome and we want to talk to him.
Oh, yeah. Just be like, beyond the, yeah.
Yeah, just yeah, tell yeah, him. Definitely. Just tell him. Why not? thanks for coming by. And again, thank you guys for stopping by. We'll hope to talk to you before you make your next Pro Tour.
Sounds good.
Excellent. Take care.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the mmcast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.